Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Women's Health for every stage of a woman's life, offering compassionate care and comprehensive obstetric and gynecological services from routine exams to specialized pelvic surgery. For more information, call 1-800-492-5538 or go to www.umm.edu/Women's Center, or you can go to the SteinerShow.org website and click on their banner and get all the information there. We're now joined by Carl Stokes, who is a course city councilman once again. He was a member of the Board of City Commissioners, School Commissioners, many years back, 1995.
I served on the School Commissioners 97 when the new board came into being, the new city-state partnership, through 99 when I left the board to run for mayor of the city.
Man grew up on the east side of our town in Latrobe Projects, went to parochial schools, as do his children. He ran for mayor in 1999 and ran for president of city council.
4 years after that.
4 years after that.
Right. Let me just mention that I divided my daughter's time. One went to parochial and one went to public.
I remember that.
Okay.
Sure. Thank you for correcting me. Lovely young women.
They are.
Your
Thank
daughters.
You. They are the best daughters.
They are. The daughters are the best, and you have two lovely daughters.
I do. Thank you.
And welcome, Carl Stokes. Good to have you here.
I'm glad to be here, Mark. Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate Go ahead.
If you've already been mayor of Cleveland, why do you want to be mayor of Baltimore?
I served my time in Cleveland, but of course, we're kidding because my namesake was the first African American mayor of Cleveland many years ago.
I'm sorry. It was a really big, stupid joke. I had to do it. So, in all seriousness, you've served the city in many capacities, in business, as an elected representative,
sure. City
council member. You've run for a citywide office twice.
Yes.
Why are you considering running again?
I wasn't considering this just 5 or 6 months ago, but when Council President Jack Young moved up from the 12th District representative seat to president of the City Council, he actually spoke to me about coming back and serving his term, the remainder of his term on the City Council. I resisted at first.
I know you.
Right.
As a disclaimer, I mean, Carl, I've interviewed many times over the years.
Sure.
But we've also known each other for eons of years.
Eons, we have.
As friends beyond politics and
That's
people
right.
who've known each other. So just that disclaimer is important.
Sure.
But you were, I remember, extremely reluctant to even take the city council seat.
I was.
You weren't going to even run again. And now you're talking about running for mayor.
You're right. I wasn't going to even run again for the city council seat, let alone run for mayor. And because I was doing education, and we'll talk about that if we get a chance.
We will have a chance.
In the next hour. So Edwin Johnson, another good friend of yours, and I and a couple of other men, Kevin Parson and Kirk Gaddy, opened a school for boys, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, middle school for boys, and we operated all day, 7 to 7, half day Saturday, 12 months a year. And I was really enjoying what I saw happening for young men, mostly African American, but there were also Hispanic and white students who were part of the school. And we just thought we had something that was very important. And again, we'll talk about that in a second. And I was very reluctant to come back in this city council, not because of council, but because of what I was doing at that time. But since coming back onto the council and going through a budget process 6 or 7 months ago, it felt like the city government had broken its contract with the citizens of the city.
How so? What do you mean?
Neighborhoods were getting very short shrift, and that's being generous in that statement. When I came in, the first thing that I heard from the administration was that pools were going to be closed and half the recreation centers were going to be closed. And at that time, I called for a complete audit of recreation and parks because I didn't think there was money that was mismanaged necessarily, but I thought that money wasn't being placed in the right places. And more importantly, I thought there was not a vision of what it is that we wanted to do. I saw that we were increasing taxes on our citizens. We raised the piggyback tax. I voted against it. We raised the telephone tax, which is the highest in the country. I voted against it. We raised the tax on electricity and gas for all of our citizens, our BG&E bills. I voted against it. We were putting all of our employees on furlough for the second year in a row. We were telling the fire and police that the pensions that we promised you when you signed on, we were now going to take much of that pension away from you. Not the new people, but the people who were 19 years away or 15 years away, and we were going to take their pensions from them. I meant that in reverse. The people who were a year away from retiring or 5 years away, because you can retire 20 years in our fire and police departments, and we were cutting their salaries. And I don't think that there was a vision of what it is we wanted to do. We just got into a budget process and started cutting sort of willy-nilly instead of saying schools are sacred, fire and police are sacred, sanitation workers are sacred. What we've been doing in this city, as I've seen, is giving millions and hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money to two or three very, very wealthy billionaires. Just two or three. I guess politically they're doing that. I said on the council floor that I thought the process of giving away taxpayer money smelled as if it was a corrupt process. I got grief from a couple of council members and from a couple of developers. I didn't call anybody corrupt. I said that the process smelled of corruption when we had no good criteria for how we gave away taxpayer dollars.
What do you mean by gave away?
Okay. This is what I mean. Recently, we were asked to give $155 million plus the interest that would accumulate to a property on the Inner Harbor. Now, that would be bonds, and instead of collecting property tax from the development that would go there, the property tax money would go to pay off the bonds and pay off the interest, and there would be no return coming back to the taxpayers who would give that money. And a better example.
Whose property are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about the Padorakis. He owns it, but this is not personal.
I didn't say it's personal. That's business
Padorakis,
as well. Right.
But there are seven parcels of land on the Inner Harbor East, seven parcels. The city is asked to give their money for five of the seven parcels. Prime example, the Marriott Hotel on the waterfront. The Marriott Hotel on the waterfront. It has a 25-year payment in lieu of tax pilot. That means this. For 25 years, that hotel pays no property tax. None. Not a penny. No matter how profitable it is. And by the way, the hotel, the Marriott on the waterfront, is the most successful hotel in Baltimore as we speak by room percentage of rooms that are booked. It is the most successful hotel in the city of Baltimore. If it were paying its property tax, it's 9 years now.
Right.
I don't want to make it complicated, but it's 9 years.
So 16 more years left.
16 years left. If it were paying its full property tax for the 9 years it's already been existence, the city would have collected $23 million in taxes. In the last 9 years. We've collected $9 because they pay a dollar a year in lieu of any property tax. We've collected $9 instead. They got 16 more years of paying us a dollar a year. It is the most successful hotel in the city.
So we could lose up towards $32 million in the next 16 years, something close to that.
In addition to what we've already lost. Now, at the Hyatt Hotel on Light Street, differently, we gave a $10 million UDAG grant to that, $10 million UDAG. And we collect property tax every year that it's been there. And not only that, but in our contract with the Hyatt, we share in their profits. So when they make a dollar to $4, we make a dollar as a city in addition to the property tax that they pay and the hotel tax that they pay, et cetera. No such deal was struck with the Waterfront Marriott. It was a political gift.
Who was mayor then?
I'm sorry?
Who was mayor then?
I can't remember 8 years ago. I think the governor was. I did lapse there. But I believe the current
governor. You can't have mayors who lapse like that, man.
So I'm not blaming
you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know. You're trying to get me in trouble, and that's good. That's how we roll, as we say, right? But it's unfair because, you know what, Oliver or Rosemont or you pick a neighborhood could use money to bring more residents in, because when we get 500 or 1,000 more people living and buying their own homes, of course we get piggyback tax, of course we get property tax, but more importantly, or just as importantly, is we get a safer neighborhood, we get people who care about the neighborhood, we have less need for services, we don't have vacant houses waiting to catch on fire or be trashed or house vermin and animals, et cetera. It's much better if we would begin to, and it's not either or. We should help some critical projects that are on our shore or around town, but we also ought to do it for the neighborhoods at the same rate of dollar that we give to the high developers.
Well, our lines are filling up. A lot of people want to ask you questions here, Carl Stokes.
Sure.
So let me ask this one question, then we'll go Mike, Anthony, Russ, Leo in that order. And we will get to your questions in just after this question, and I'll throw questions in between the listeners as well as they spur me on with ideas. So are you one of the candidates for mayor of Baltimore, as was our last interviewee, Otis Raleigh, who thinks we should cut the property tax in half?
Yes. I thought I was the first person to say that.
I don't know if you're the first or second.
It doesn't matter. I think we're stunning our own growth by having a disadvantaged tax. Also, I think if we cut the developer of that big-time project I mentioned earlier said to me, Councilman, if you can cut the property tax by 50%, we don't need tax incentives. We don't need pilots because the playing field will become level.
Well, let me just ask a question. This is a question. Let me put a little pushback here on that idea.
Go ahead.
Everybody says they want to cut property because I want to tell them this.
I'm with you.
I've been doing some research and looking at what that means.
Okay.
All right? So the estimated property tax revenue for our city right now for this fiscal year is $766 million.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you cut that in half. That means we lose $383 million.
Okay.
The city loses $383 million. So where do you get that $383 million? How do you make that money up? And what do you cut? Where do you take $383 million out of the city budget?
Okay. So you don't cut it all in 1 year. You don't do that all in 1 year. It's over 5 years, I would say, 5 years that we do that. And I think at the same time, in the short term, we are going to have a bit, not as much as you think it is, Mike.
That's what it is. That's what 383. Half it is $383 million.
I heard what you said. And I'm saying to you, we're not going to cut it all at one time. So we're not going to lose that number in the first year out, because we're going to do it in over 5 years. So maybe it's 20% and maybe it's 10%. Let me tell you this, and I need to come – if you could allow me to come back and just bring my numbers and we go over it. Because I'm going to tell you that as we start to cut the tax, and you can't start with 2 cents or 3 cents, you have to do a significant 20 cents, 25 cents. Remember, we're a dollar and 26 cents higher than anybody else. But remember, as you start to cut it, investment starts to come into the city. The realtors tell me, that people want to buy city property. But when they compare the taxes between the city and the surrounding counties, that they decide it's not such a good value. So when you start down this road, the base will grow. And this is, to me, economics 101. It's like having...
But let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
So even cut it by... If you take it over 5 years, so that's $75 million a year or so that you have to cut from the budget every year.
And I think we do that.
$75 million.
And I think we do that.
What do you take it from?
See, that's that great old question that we wait until now. First thing you have to do is decide what is it you want to keep. You have to decide what you want to keep. And then whatever's at the bottom of that list, brother, you cut it. Now, that's what happens in my house. I don't know about your house, but in my house, I say, you know what? I want heat on. I want lights on. I'd like to have cable television.
Might not afford it, though.
But I can't afford it.
But the house is not,
gone.
Our homes are not a government. It's different.
No, it's not. It's not different. We keep adding things on to government. Every time somebody says, let's do a garden, give us a couple hundred. It's just a couple hundred thousand dollars to do gardens. It's no big deal. And we have a lot of these little things that are very nice things. Instead of doing the big deal, you know, every day in the city, students go to school with heat that doesn't work properly. They go to school with windows that don't open or windows that don't close. But, Mark, we're giving hundreds of millions of dollars to people in the harbor, brother. And we could put that money. You know what? I'll tell you what to cut out. New jails. Let's cut them out. Let's put less that's money in money. Incarceration that's not, and put more money in education.
I agree with that, but that's not our money. That's state money.
No, they want some of our money. Just like the state center office, they want $300 million from the city to put in. They want some of our money to build the new, children's jail, whatever they call the jail. I don't mean to, but they want some city money in there also.
Well, so, staying in this line of thinking, in 1983, as you know, we knew each other then,
right.
That I helped create the first. Not to worry about the inner harbor. Let's forget about the outer harbor campaign. We had that losing campaign for Billy Murphy. For
absolutely,
mayor.
two cities, two Baltimores.
So two Baltimores.
Right.
So the issue is that, and so what I'm saying that I wanted to say is, I understand what you're saying about inner harbor development and people getting wealthy off of our money and not paying back to the city. I understand.
Gotcha.
But
there's your money right there.
It is a huge assumption to make.
Okay.
And a dangerous assumption maybe to make that this tax base would kind of magically grow over 5 years and we're going to restore this money, that more money is going to come in. We don't know that. And meanwhile, we're taking money out of Baltimore without knowing how we're going to fill the hole.
Actually, if you're delicately say this, again, I think it's economics 101. It's two gas stations on the corner. They're both $3. One guy says, I'm dropping my rate, my gas, to $2.95 or $2.90. And are you saying that he's hoping that he gets a bigger volume? I'm telling you, he's not hoping. He knows that if he drops his gas a dime, his volume is going to grow. Can I give you Walmart, the biggest profit-making entity in the world?
Mm-hmm.
How did they get there? Well,
exploiting their workers.
Exploiting the workers is absolutely one way to do it. You're such a smart bleep. But we go to the lower price. I'm telling you, competitive. Baltimore is a great city. It has too many amenities for people not to say, I'd rather live there. It has too many amenities. But I'm telling you, rich people say to me, I have a friend who's a CEO in New York of a major worldwide company. He owns a condo in Harbor Court. He said, I was going to buy a second one. The taxes were higher than I'm paying in New York City. I said, why would I invest? Why would I do it? I'm telling you, it's not a hope. It's not a dream. It's not a wish. The tax base would grow if we became more competitive. People are waiting. Now, it's not just Carl's dream. It's the realtors across the state who are telling me this. It's economists who are telling me this. It is other cities who have done this. They have done it. They have seen it. It works. It's not a pipe dream. This is not a bait and switch. We will grow our tax base if we become more competitive with our tax rate.
Carl Stokes is with us. He right now is the 12th District City Councilman. He is seriously considering running for mayor of the city of Baltimore in this election. That's in September against the city mayor. Right now, Stephanie Rawlings-Blake. We are going to open the phones as he talks to the voters. 410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air. All right, Mike, you there? Give a second. We got him?
Hello?
Mike, you're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air.
All right, it's not Mike, it's Hank. She took my name down wrong. One, I'd like to know, Mr. Stokes, what are you planning on doing for making the city green?
Making it green?
Yes, making it more green.
Well, I'd like to redevelop neighborhoods. I think that we have a lot of, you know, I was in Savannah, Georgia, and I've never been there before, but I was there.
Beautiful town.
It is a beautiful town. Why is it beautiful? Because it's literally green. Because every neighborhood has a square. I mean, every few blocks, there's a square, a big public square in the midst of these residences or these businesses. And so I would like to, first of all, take down very, very decrepit neighborhoods. We've got miles, blocks and blocks and blocks of vacant housing. And in some cases, some of it is very historic and some of it is recapturable. I don't know if that's a word.
I think we can
recapture some of this. And but in other places, we ought to make it, excuse the term, not necessarily more suburban-like, but we ought to be able to put more green. I'd like to see more ball fields. I'd like to see more squares. I'd like to see, just because we have a grid now with streets go back and forth, I would not build where there are more, where there are the same number of streets crisscrossing a neighborhood. I'd give one or two ways in and one or two ways out of a community so people can allow their children to play on the playgrounds, that everyone has a small plot of grass. Even when I grew up in the projects, we had a plot of grass. I grew up in Latrobe projects, and we were three-story projects. But those of us who lived in those projects, each of us who lived in the upper stories still had a plot of grass downstairs. And, of course, the people who lived on the first floor had a plot of grass out back. So I want to redesign and reconfigure our neighborhoods.
You had a second quick question, Hank? Hank's still there? Oh, I thought Hank had two questions.
When I said green, I meant like as far as
environment,
on like certain utilities that you use, certain papers and stuff like that that you use, like as far as having the government go green, right?
Okay. The government go green in terms of recycling, et cetera?
Yeah, as far as recycling, et cetera, trying to make these lights, which we use, which I keep telling everybody, these not the ones that turn green, but the ones that's regular white light.
I'm with you. I'm sorry. I missed that. I took it literally.
Right.
I gotcha.
If you just take them, just the little white light that you use, it's not running during the daytime.
Right.
If you put solar on them, right?
You're right.
That right there in itself could be $1 million for a police or a firefighter, right?
You're right. Thank you, Hank.
Just put yourself alone, right?
I'm with you. We should retrofit the lights
all the time.
I'm with you. I know the school buildings aren't. I can't speak to the general government buildings because I don't know for sure. But I know that in many of the school buildings that are being retrofitted so that we're using lights, which only give off a third as much energy, but just as bright, in some cases brighter. And then if we could put more the sensors in so that when people forget and walk out of a room and don't turn out the lights, after a moment or two, a minute or two, those lights would go off automatically. So what you're saying is correct. And also replacing as quickly as possible these very old, inefficient furnaces. And even if they're still working, a lot of them are not, but even if they're still working, to replace these furnaces would save us upwards of millions and millions of dollars. So it'd be worth to replace these furnaces so that in the short run, the first 3 to 5 years, it may have cost us more to replace them. But in the out years, they save us so much that they pay for themselves.
Thank you, Hank.
Thanks, Hank.
410-319-8888, Anthony in Randallstown, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Anthony. Welcome.
Hi, Anthony.
Good evening. If my memory is faulty, you know, correct me, but it seemed like last year that one of the news media said that you did not vote on something that had to either do with the Walmart that's going to be over on 25th Street, or it has something to do with getting Walmart and other people to pay a so-called living wage, which would have been around $10. If you did not vote on some legislation last year, could you state why you didn't?
Absolutely. It was the Walmart bill. I abstained on the Walmart bill. And I, frankly, did not want to vote for the Walmart bill because I think there were items there that were sitting on the table which the city did not pick up. And that is beyond the living wage. There were issues of we were, again, going to give Walmart money. I don't care what people tell you, we, the city, are going to give them a tax break. And it's not Walmart, it's the developer. Walmart is not the developer, it's one of the tenants. Having said that, we're going to give them a tax break, and yet there's no written agreement that says that city residents, and that's also bothers me greatly, that we keep giving away tax dollars, and then someone comes in from Philadelphia or Washington, D.C., the contractor comes in, they're not even Baltimore people, they're not people who live in the communities. They're not. So I did not see an agreement in writing. We don't have one that says Baltimore citizens will get the jobs for these, that Baltimore construction companies will get the jobs. But I got to tell you this. The neighborhood associations, except for one, all voted for the development to move forward. I represent many of those neighborhoods. I have somewhat of a duty to be bound by what the people I represent wishes are. In this case, I got to tell you, in a fit of consciousness, I felt like I couldn't vote for it, and I didn't. And I just didn't feel that I should vote no when the neighborhoods were saying yes. And that may not be the greatest explanation, but that's my explanation on that particular vote.
Anthony, thanks for your call and the question. I mean, it's another one of your tax break questions, and it also goes to the point of we've had debates about Walmart on this show, and what's been intriguing to me is that it's been the poor and working class citizens of neighborhoods around that Walmart,
yes,
black and white,
that's right,
who want it,
right,
because they want a cheap place to shop where they can buy groceries they can afford.
Right.
And walk to.
I understand, but don't...
I'm not saying that they should do it or not do it. I'm just saying that is a because of contradiction is a difficult thing to wrestle with.
It is difficult. I mean, Walmart, you made a half-serious joke earlier about...
I wasn't joking about the exploitation of workers.
Well, see, there you go. So they're exploiting workers just as we're buying goods in China, which is exploiting everybody. And yet people want to go, they want to buy cheaply, either forgetting or not realizing why the goods are so cheap. And that's something I wrestle with, not that I'm more...
And they want jobs, too. People want jobs, and Walmart offers jobs.
But at what cost? You know, they can go down the street the Safeway and make more money. They're going to go to Walmart because... it's cheaper, but they're going to pay their workers cheaper. At the end of the day, the Safeways and the Giants may wind up leaving the city because they can't compete.
We have to take a short break. Come right back. I'm going to go right to Russ. Our next call, Russ, Leo, Darry Lee, in that order. We're going to get to all your calls, and I have a couple more questions for our councilman, Carl Stokes, on the way as well. Stay with us, 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner here with Carl Stokes, who is running to become mayor of Baltimore. Of course, he now represents the 12th District on the City Council, 410-319-8888. Russ, we lost Russ. We'll come to the next caller then. Russ has great questions. I'm sure he'll call back. On the way to the next caller, we had a debate on the shooting that took place and the police last night here on the show.
Sure.
Even the former police major from the Maryland State Police, who was, who now runs the Hopkins Leadership Academy, Police Leadership Academy Institute, said, and he wrote all the manuals for how to use a gun and when to use a gun and when to shoot, and for the Chiefs of Police Association and for the Maryland State Police,
right.
Retired major, 27 years. He said, I can't explain to you why police would fire 41 shots into a crowd. It doesn't make sense. So, two questions. What's your response to that? and what you think should be happening, A. And B, the second suggestion he said, he's sitting here, that's why I'm pointing over there,
okay,
was that, and he's the Maryland State Police officer for all these 27 years, he said everybody who's hired from now on to the Baltimore City Police Department should have to live in Baltimore City.
Well,
so your comment on
the first.
Yeah.
We can't do that at this point.
Why can't we do that?
Because we don't have enough of a pool to choose from. Now, I said to the police union, you know how to solve Baltimore's financial indebtedness?
They did it in Boston, and they fought, and every policeman in Boston now has to live in the city of Boston.
From this point on, huh? Because, you know, most of our firing police, over 80%, 85%, don't live in Baltimore City. And immediately—
They live in Baltimore County. They live in Harford County in Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania. And, of course— that's my reverse, of course, to the property tax, because if that 85% lived in Baltimore City, a fire police, it would pretty much get close to solving our deficit in the city. Not kidding. Piggyback tax, property tax, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know that we have a pool, frankly, Mark, at this point, to hire all of our police officers from this point forward. I'd have to look at the numbers, how many people we bring in, and I would probably take state enabling legislation. I'm not opposed to it. I think it's the best thing for the city. I think that the police who live in the city currently should take their cars home at night. I think they should take the cars home, and they should have full use of the cars to do the grocery shopping or errands, as well as when they're on duty. I think that the police should live in the city. I don't know, one, if we have the pool to do it. I don't want to hurt ourselves by doing legislation that we can't actually practically do. That's the first. The second part of what happened, first of all, let us continue to offer our condolences to both the officer as well as the citizen who were killed that night. It is, I don't know a lot about policing. It's not my strong suit, but I know that many things went wrong that night. It's obvious that many things went wrong that night, from whatever the first shot was fired to the police not being able to who were from the same station house, not being able to identify a fellow officer, or the officer not being able to identify himself. I don't know. Wasn't there. To the number of shots that were fired, as you said, into a crowd. This was like a circular firing squad. And they just start firing, and there's a crowd of people, and there are 41 law enforcement shots, not one citizen shot, fired. There's an investigation going on. There's going to be one after that by probably a federal investigatory organization. And so we'll know. But there— at this point, all I can say is there a lot that went wrong. By the way, if I could, you didn't ask. There's a lot went wrong in Upper Park Heights also.
The Shamrin.
With Shamrin. Listen, I wasn't there either. But from everything I know from my own little investigation, the kid was not committing a crime. That is the young man who was jumped. These guys profiled the young man and decided to beat him up. There's something very deeply wrong there also. You can't have that, first of all. It's nonsense. For people on patrol. And I think Citizen on Patrol is an excellent program. I think the program in Northwest Baltimore is excellent. I don't know if Shamrin is excellent. And I know in this case, what they did was absolutely wrong.
Well, let's get another caller here.
Okay.
I mean, those things, I'm going to just say this to pass it to you, will not work unless patrols in neighborhoods like Northwest Baltimore are intentionally, if not forcefully, made to be interracial groups in that community.
Of course.
It can't be just Orthodox Jews in one thing and black folks in another thing.
Of course not.
And secular Jews in another. That's ridiculous.
You're right.
That's disaster.
And it was.
And it makes people communicate with one another. Anyway, 410-319-8888. Russ, you're back. You're on the air.
Greetings, Mark.
Hi, Russ.
You and Carl, this is Russell F. from Lafayette Avenue.
Oh, sure. Hi, how you been?
Hey, long time no see, man. How
Very long time. How you been? We grew up.
Good. Carl, I know of your love of and passion for this city. You don't have to convince me, and I encourage other folks to look closely at you because
Thank you.
I think you're a very viable candidate for mayor.
Thank you.
And Mark kind of stole my thunder, but before I
I'm
say
sorry,
that,
man.
As far as the Far Heights thing, I said on Anthony's show, Mark's colleague, that this seems to me the reasonable thing to do would be to expand that district from Upper Park Heights down to the Park Circle and integrate the force. I don't see anything wrong with that. But, you know, be that as it may, I don't know what the problem would be in trying to do that.
Okay.
So what I really want to talk about is Mark had a gentleman on the show yesterday that had an incident with Baltimore City Police. I'm not going to rehash that.
Oh, yeah. Greg Thompson, the sax player.
But every time I speak to Bill Field or anyone in authority in the city, I recommend that we go back to foot patrol. Not the kind we had in the Pomelo and Battaglia, but a up-to-date, community-oriented style police, because it would have eliminated the problem that this gentleman had if the police officers are in the community, out of the cars, get rid of the cars. We don't need them. They consume gas. They tear them up at alarming rates. All those things, that's a lot of money, because money is always the issue when we start talking about foot patrol, how many more officers would take, et cetera, et cetera. But if you have people in the community who know the citizens, they would have seen this guy coming and going, knowing that he had carrying a saxophone and not a gun, seeing the kind of people that he trucked with every day that comes and goes from his house or wherever, it seemed to me that this kind of thing would have been brought under control. And secondly, when you talk about the money, why not spend the money up front and have the kind of police force where we can prevent these kind of things versus what's going to happen now? Because I'm sure you're going to hear from this young man again because he's retained counsel, and it's going to cost the city a serious penny. And not just in his case, but also on the shooting of the cop and all these other things. Why pay the money on the back end, in other words, for lawsuits when we could put it up front and have a viable police force that makes the city safe? And let me just finish by saying the statistical policing that we do may work for people's evaluations, but you know, we'll know we have a safe city, not by the murder rate, but when our citizens come back out after dark
right.
to enjoy the nightlife of this city.
Thanks, Russell. Good to hear from you. Say hello to family for me, would you please? Now, Russell, you know what he was talking? He was talking common sense. And that doesn't work so well sometimes in city government or anybody else's government. Common sense. It just makes sense that officers know the people in the neighborhoods. It just makes sense that an officer walks through a back alley and sees a door ajar and says, there's a problem. Let me go see. Next door, there's a door ajar, but the officer says, it's Mr. Green's house. He always leaves the door open for air to come in or whatever it is. Or he knows my daughter, your children, and he sees them doing something and he says, hey, what are you doing? Come here. And he gets them and he brings them to me, or if I'm not home yet or you're not home yet, he has a conversation that lets that child know that his dad or his mom is going to hear about this a little later. It is common sense to put officers on foot patrol, walking the street, talking to businesses, talking to people, because it will save lives. It will save the officers' lives. It will save the citizen lives. We're not spending our money properly. It makes no sense to have people driving through our communities and not knowing the communities. It just doesn't make sense.
Let's return to the phones at 410-319-8888, and I'm going to ask everyone to keep their questions pointed because there are a lot of callers calling in, and we want to get as many people on as we can to quiz the man who wants to be mayor of Baltimore. Leo, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark Steiner.
Hi, Leo. How are you, Mr. Barrows?
I'm doing great, Carl Stokes. You have a lot of passion for our city, and we're appreciative of it. I hope you will collaborate with Frank Conaway. I'd like to see a black mayor who cares about all the people, and you guys have paid your dues, so I hope you... Because neither of you are rich men, I hope you pool your resources and decide who's going to do what and how and who's going to run. Very quickly, let me say that the developers are getting over like a fat rat here. They're not paying taxes. They're running amok in our city, and that has to change, and I'm glad you're on the right side with respect to trying to bring about changes in that arena. I'd like to see the police commissioner fired. I don't think he's doing a good job. I don't think he's ever done a good job, and you may not agree with me, but I think he's incompetent, and I want to see I'm tired of the police holding the citizens of this city hostage in terms of their responses to calls for cuts in salary and pay, small cuts. If we all have to tighten our belts, they have that same responsibility, irrespective of the fact that they don't live in our city. Same is true of the fire department. Do you realize we've got some firefighters coming from as far away as New York? And how do I know it? I've talked to people who work in the fire department. So let me say again, Hilton Hotel is an example of a boondoggle that I don't think has been or will be successful.
Okay.
And
Billy, do you have a question? We have a lot of callers. Do you have a question?
Well, my question is, why don't we have an audit of city agencies? Joan Pratt talks a lot and does nothing. Why aren't we auditing the city agencies in terms of the overtime that we're paying folks and making our city more accountable across the board in all city agencies? What about the audit? When is
That's a fair question.
Right. I'm still waiting on the audit I called for last March on the wreck in parks. Let me just take a quick side to something Leo mentioned earlier. I'm not broad-brushing all developers. We have a tremendous amount of developers in the city who are doing great projects in our city. They're bringing in new residents. They're doing small projects in the business community. It's just two or three guys who are getting all of the hundreds of millions of dollars. And let me say that the developer community is a good, strong community by and large in this city. In terms of audits, on a rotating basis, most city agencies are supposed to be audited. When I called for an audit on Wreck and Parks a year ago, no one can remember if Wreck and Parks has ever been audited, including a former director who served under Schaefer. He's never remembered an audit of Wrecks and Parks. So I think it is something that citizens, as long with the council, have to push the government on, is, again, doing something that makes good common sense, which is auditing our agencies.
410-319-8888. Next up is Gary. You're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Welcome.
Is that Jerry?
Gary.
Yeah, that's not Jerry, but Gary.
Gary, I'm sorry. Hi, Gary.
I'm doing just fine.
Right.
Now, I'm glad you just recently just talked about the developers and stuff. A lot of, you know, there are some developers who are coming in town trying to deal with a lot of issues that are in the communities that are basically underdeveloped.
That's true.
Trying to bring jobs. My question is, what do we plan to do in reference to the bureaucracy that is being held up in housing? Because there are a lot of bureaucracy in there. I noticed that a lot of things have changed ever since the last mayor was there, and a lot of the people who were there are now gone. And the commissioners and stuff, it's a lot of changes in reference to that. What are you going to do about that and making sure that those other developers who may be living in town are trying to do certain things to make things provisional and providable for those residents who live in those underdeveloped communities and want to bring jobs in there and also bring certain entities in there that are supplying what those communities need, because those communities are food dead and they are also don't have a lot of things in there that are supportive for the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you very much for the questions. Look, I got to give a positive nod to the present administration in the announcement of the vacant-to-value deal. That is to try to package these vacant properties and get them out into the hands of investors, into new home buyers or people who would like to be home buyers or own a home, as well as to the developers. I think that that shows great promise. So, and since I've been back, I got to tell you that there have been changes in housing, but every time I've asked or others I've seen ask to help in a situation that has become bogged down with the regulations and over-regulations, they have seemed to really want to help. And so I think that is starting to change, and I got to give a positive nod where I see it, Gary. I think it's starting to change. It can go faster, frankly. I know that I won't go through the whole story, but on East Bond Street, North Bond Street in East Baltimore, I'm sorry, there was a small group of developers who had never developed before but turned 20 properties into just a great place to be, and people from Prince George's and Virginia, I'm not kidding you, came and bought these properties at numbers that were 2 to 3 times the value of the surrounding properties. And at another time, maybe they can come by and tell their story of how they were able to do that. But I'm in agreement with you that we must make it easier for people who have resources to bring more jobs to the city through development.
The man who made that happen, that you're the lauding that program, the, really the credit goes to Michael Braverman,
right.
Deputy Commissioner. He's the one who's been shelling for that, trying to get that done for years.
Absolutely. And I think Michael is one of the stars over at the Department of Housing.
If not the 410-319-8888. Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening. How you doing, Mark?
Good evening, Dave.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. Now, you mentioned bringing up the Shamrim incident. And my question is, have you, and if you have not, will you force Shamrim, Ronnie Rosenbluth, to name the other two Shamrim officers who were mentioned in the state attorney's charge papers of that incident? Because to date, as far as I know, those suspects have not been named, have not been charged. Are you willing to demand that the police, Shamrim, and the Jewish council in Park Heights name those other two suspects and bring them to justice?
Have those folks not been publicly named? Are their names not in the...
They're not in the charge papers, and they have not been named.
They're not in the charge papers.
But they weren't not in the charge papers, that's for sure.
Okay, they were not. But I think, hasn't the second one been... I think their name should be known, frankly. I think Shamrim should exit the door. I'm going to just say that. I'm not going to stand by it and hold back. I'm not going to abstain again. I think they should be shown the door. I think they have shown their bias and their unwillingness to integrate themselves, not just racially, but inside of their own faith that they won't integrate. And I think we have a major problem here. I think the names should be brought forward. Listen, I also want to mention, and thank you for that. We've been talking a lot about developers here, Mark, and big projects. But I think why I would be interested and why I've thought about running again is I think we've, as I said at the beginning, we've broken our promises with the neighborhoods. The neighborhoods are still violent places in so many of our neighborhoods. You can play the numbers game if you wish, but I can tell you that, as Russell said, folk don't go out after dark. Even if they live 2 blocks from their own church, they're not going to walk those 2 blocks to the church. They may get in the car and drive 2 blocks. But our neighborhoods, the schools are weak. Kids are going to school every day, I tell you again, in dilapidated school buildings or buildings that don't function properly in terms of health and safety. And yet we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars in some parts of our area, but we'll guarantee with bonds some development, but we won't figure out a way creatively to do the $2 billion worth of renovations that our schools need. And our neighborhoods aren't as safe as they could be. We do short shrift, I think, again, to use that term, to how we police or how we decide. I think that too many people have this thought in their head that some violence is acceptable. There's some level of violence that's acceptable. School scores at some number is acceptable. We do not yet have a good school system. We've got an improving school system, but way too many of our young people are not proficient.
You're not happy with Alonzo's work?
I'm happy versus what it was before he came in. We are not a good system. We are not. And so we need to get better faster. I am not happy that we're not putting enough resources. We're the only jurisdiction in Maryland. We give 9%, 9 to 11% of our operating funds to the school system. Practically every other jurisdiction in the state, save one, gives 40 to 55% of their operating income.
But if we want to cut property taxes, how are we going to begin to think to do
that? It's priorities, Mark. I say that again. It's priorities. The city doesn't have the vision that it should have. Common sense. We have to determine what it is that we want. We don't need jails. In the short term, we need jails because recidivism is also killing the city. People who commit violent crimes, particularly with guns, should go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, they should go to jail. When they come back, don't do it again, or this time, we'll really put you away. I'm strong on that because the violence that happens in our neighborhoods are by people, almost always, who already have a violent past. I say, again, that we have to reorder our priorities. And that means that we don't build $200 million jails or $100 million jails, that we get by with what we have, and we put the money in the short term into education, because in the long term, we won't need the fancy jails. We won't need them. But right now, we're predicting that because fourth graders can't read, that this is the population we're going to have for jail. And so, yes, I'm saying to you very clearly that we need to put more money in the short term into extended day and recreation for young people. By the way, let me just, if I'm going to be unpopular, let me just continue.
You got about a minute left to be, less than a minute left to be
a lot of
unpopular.
Entities in this town pay no taxes at all, but they get city services. They get police and sanitation and fire department and improved roads. But they pay nothing. They're called tax exempt. And I'm not saying to tax them, but I'm saying that they should be paying a fee for city service.
Some of the nonprofits like Johns Hopkins
Hospital? I am. Yes, sir. I am. And Yale does it in New Haven. And they do it big time.
In Cleveland, too.
And that's right. So they ought to do it. They ought to pony up, and they ought to feel they can do it. Thanks for bringing me on, sir.
Carl Stokes, pleasure to have you here. As you make this decision, come back and talk some more.
I will.
And if you make the decision to do it, then you have to come back a lot more.
Okay, I'll be glad to do that. Thanks, Mark, for everything.
Good to have you. Councilman Carl Stokes, who is considering a run for mayor of the city of Baltimore. Judy Landers, who is also considering, will be here on the 31st of January. We're going to continue our conversations with those who would be mayor of this city continually. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Christina Arison and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our intern today is Naomi Wasson, who is going back to Wellesley College. A brilliant young woman has been working with us. Good luck in your next semester at college. We need more young people like you from Baltimore City. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.